You're listening to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like geography, the visual arts, performing arts, storytelling, and literature. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by philosopher David Kinney, an Omidyar postdoctoral fellow at the Santa Fe Institute, SFI, who is leading a new effort called Foundations and Applications of Humanities Analytics, which seeks to help new humanities scholars study culture through computational tools and complexity science. We're also joined by SFI external professor Simon DeDeo, a cognitive scientist at Carnegie Mellon University, who is co-leading this new NEH-funded effort along with David and Carrie Cohen, SFI's Director for Education. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
This is so exciting talking with you, and I'd like to know a little bit more about the upcoming programs at your institute. People who choose to go into advanced work in the humanities as opposed to advanced work in the computer sciences do that because they feel like there's not going to be any math. What kind of skills do you expect students to bring to your online course, and what kind of skills can they expect to acquire?
One thing about my research, I work now in a fairly mathematical area of philosophy, but I don't have an undergraduate degree in mathematics at all. Many people in my field of philosophy actually do bring in significant undergraduate backgrounds in mathematics. I don't. So I'm sort of a late in life math enthusiast in some ways. And so I can definitely empathize with someone coming to this without much of a math background and possibly even significant amount of math phobia. So I'll say that there are no math prerequisites for this course. None.
So, for example, I'm looking at complexityexplorer.org, which is online classes from SFI, Fractals and Scaling, Introduction to Complexity, Introduction to Dynamical Systems and Chaos, along with tutorials on differential equations, etc. So you are saying these are not prerequisites.
Not at all. Not at all. Not at all. I don't know if I would pass all those courses necessarily. Our core audience here is a PhD student in the humanities. So what we expect you to bring to this course is your enthusiasm and your background, to whatever extent it is, in an area of the humanities. Now, if you're someone else and you have a slightly different background, that's fine too, and no one's going to be turned away at the door at all. But that's sort of who we're designing the course for, in a way, and with them in mind. You should be open to the idea that these tools can be generative, that they can be generative of new research questions. I think if you come in as a sort of unpersuadable skeptic about the use of computational or quantitative tools in the humanities, then I think it's almost an analytic truth that the course will not be for you, right? We are going to incorporate skepticism. We are going to incorporate a fair amount of reflection about the techniques we're using, and we're not closed off to the arguments against the utility of computational methods in some areas of the humanities, and we're certainly not skeptical of the idea that you have to be careful about the way in which you claim that these tools are beneficial. And we want people in this course who share that skepticism and have that skepticism. You know, really inspired by our director of education at SFI, Carrie Cohen, we've had a series of focus groups with PhD students in the humanities and deliberately cultivated, you know, a mix of people from different institutions and people who work in more literary humanities versus more historical humanities. And so we are sort of building up a sense of what that audience wants. I think a really great part of developing this course has been just reaching out and getting to know people through these discussion sections.
So this was built with diversity in mind. I mean, you all are looking at ways to make it accessible, useful, and usable in as many ways possible, considering that it's all very rigorous.
Right.
Right. You know, is there going to be a lot of hard math? No. A lot of this stuff, it's like counting. At the same time, we're really aware that people come in with anxiety about reasoning with numbers. That's one of the things we've learned in these focus groups is take it down a notch and then take it down another notch. And we can do that without sacrificing rigor, which is really exciting. And I think that's been a really exciting challenge to figure out how you can do more with less. And the answer is basically everything. The one thing we can't teach, right, is how to read. numbers are hard, but you know what? Like, words are hard. What we're really keeping in mind is that people who are coming to us know how to read, certainly better than me. And that's why, you know, we talk about bringing people from the humanities in. That's the kind of stuff that we're hoping they bring to us as well.
These PhD students who complete the online course will be coming in with their own projects, right? Are they going to need to build the computer-based queries, or are they going to need to have programming skills, or will they be collaborating with people who have those skills?
I think it's definitely going to be more the latter. I think it's more going to be about collaboration. We will see in terms of how many applications we get for this online course. You know, what we're really trying to do with that in-person program is connect people who are currently PhD students mostly, but maybe in other areas as well within the humanities, who could then go on to be collaborators, right? That sort of next generation digital humanities scholars. So when we select people, we're going to have those kinds of collaborations in mind. And maybe that means that, you know, one person comes in, they said, I've already coded this into Python and I really just want feedback on how to write it up into a paper. And someone else has a great idea for a research program, but from their application, it's clear that maybe they're not as built up on Python as some other people, or maybe they haven't looked at Python at all and it's really just in this more nascent stage. If the project's great, we're going to be interested in bringing in that person too, because we want to facilitate that collaboration.
With that kind of collaboration in mind, especially for humanities scholars who may not have the computational or programming or coding skill sets, are you also going to connect them with what I presume are some of the finest people doing this kind of work at SFI to actually build some of these tools?
One of the exciting things about the project is we're bringing people from many different universities here to New Mexico. We're bringing, hopefully, a scholar of Russian literature and history from Pittsburgh. We're hopefully bringing a historian of Britain in from Dallas. We're looking at people in the information sciences from Berkeley and Stanford. So these are people that we're bringing in both to teach the classes and to build up some of these skills, to hopefully provide their first mentorship and their first experience, perhaps, of collaborating across the humanities science boundary.
Has there been any discussion of a toolkit where you're not just custom building everything for a particular research project or a particular humanities question that could be deployed in a wider way?
So that's a really interesting question. I think in some sense, my first instinct is to kind of push back a little bit. What we're trying to do with this course is really start from the foundations. I think there's a reason it's called Foundations and Applications of Humanities Analytics, is we want to give people the foundations where they can design their own humanities analytics project from the starting point of a humanities-based question. And then they have enough familiarity with the broad set of tools that one might use in order to answer that question. And they can be flexible and agile in the way that they do that. That's really our core goal. Because frankly, you know, there are other courses out there that do more of a, here's how you do topic modeling. And it's very much about how you load the data in and things like that. Having said that, in another lifetime, I very briefly worked at the finance side of the software industry. And it reminds me of turning a service into a product, which anyone is going to tell you to do because a service is expensive to provide and a product is cheap to provide. I mean, that's one reason why it's nice to have a federal partner here in federal funding, is that we have the funding to do the service and not just the product. But having said that, you know, in the long run, this is 3 years of funding. But SFI is trying to grow. And one of the ways it's going to grow is by getting into the humanities. And so what does the permanent offering in the humanities from SFI look like? That's an interesting question. It's never going to be just sort of click and output your digital humanities project, but something maybe a little more programmatic to help you along that line that sits in one place and you don't have to take a course chronologically and go to Santa Fe for an intensive workshop. I mean, something like that could be cool. I haven't thought about it before, so that's why I say it's a really good question.
You will also be teaching these people how to communicate their needs and ideas to the computer scientists that may be helping to build the project. Is that going to be part of the instruction?
One of the big themes that we really pushed to the NEH was this idea of empowering people in the humanities. A point-and-click interface is in some ways disempowering. what we want to do is two things. One is to give them a philosophical toolkit so that they can think clearly about the kinds of things they want to do, how to put together, let's say, a model of their question. The other thing is all of these projects in the end are going to be collaborative. We often think of the humanities as a solo thing. People sit down and they read all of Wordsworth. But humanities scholars have been collaborating for years. You have to work with librarians and archivists. You have a question in literature. You have to talk to historians. So we see this as part of the formation of a graduate student. It'll become increasingly common, but really fundamentally part of the essence of what the humanities have always been, which is a collaborative exploration.
There's just two things to add. One is this emphasis on collaboration, I think, is not at odds with swimming against the current of what professionalization in the humanities has traditionally looked like, which is that sole authored manuscript as being the thing that a PhD student is going to produce that's going to get them a job. With the world changing, a lot of PhD students in the humanities have to look beyond that in some ways. And I think scientific academic output, which is often much more collaborative and much more based on paper level outputs, bringing people in that direction is great. You know, as much as we're empowering humanities PhD students to speak the language of the computer scientists and information theorists who could be helping them craft a digital humanities project, we also want to demystify some of that language too, because something Simon said a few times over the course of these recordings is the extent to which some of these tools do amount to counting. While I would never sort of belittle the power of probability theory and information theory, I think it's amazing, you know, everything I do in some ways is about the power of probability theory to communicate philosophical concepts in my own research. I will say that sometimes probability theory dresses up in very elegant formalism that can be a little intimidating to the non-practitioner, what can amount to counting in a lot of cases. And so breaking down those barriers and doing that sort of demystification work is definitely part of what we're trying to do.
I know that you're still developing all of this to start deploying it in the summer of 2021 and then refine it over the next few years. But through our entire discussion today, I've been hearing a lot about texts. Is there discussion about what this might look like if people were trying to apply it to music or audio recordings? Like if I wanted to analyze all sorts of linguistic tendencies in folkways recordings.
Between the two of us, Simon is definitely much more the digital humanities practitioner. And as I understand it, Simon's work has been really sort of leading the way in applying these techniques to text. Having said that, you know, we have people at SFI who have been doing stuff with auditory media, and I'm thinking particular of Tyler Margetis. He is someone who has studied phase transitions in jazz improvisations in particular. So looking at when a jazz ensemble jumps from one phase of improvisation to another and predicting that and seeing what the music does in the lead up to the improvisation. So there you've got cultural angle, and then jazz is this extremely important cultural artifact. There's also a psychological angle, right? Because the act of improvisation is so psychological. And look, if someone came to us with that kind of project,
you'd find a way to do it.
Here's what I'll say for sure. The online course is for anyone to check out. Complete that online course. You really love it and you want to come to SFI and do this more intensive workshop experience. Then you've got to apply. Then there's a little more of a selection process. We would certainly, I think, not be looking at applications saying, oh, it's not text, bin. Definitely not. If it's a good project and we think it's supportable and it's interesting to us, then we're not going to disqualify it just because it doesn't involve text.
It seems like for people who are just starting to get their teeth into it, text is easy because it's machine readable and you don't have to come up with a whole new vocabulary. I'm thinking about trying to interpret film or visual art where you would have to come up with a whole vocabulary because it's not just the colors and the forms.
I wouldn't want to say text is easy, you know, certainly not, but this kind of work is being done in a lot of different media.
One of the things I'll say is you think of something in this domain and start doing it, you're probably the first person to do it. There's something extraordinarily exciting about that. I expect Dave and I are going to learn more from the students than we even expect. What is art, right? Art is chance and time, probability and unfolding. And so in one sense, if you can build something that can find a pattern in jazz, then in many ways, you've reduced that problem where you've taken that problem into a world where text and sound are not particularly different. An artwork, a two-dimensional, three-dimensional artwork, it's always experienced unfolding over time. You can track someone's eyes as they move over a painting. These are distinctions that are so obvious to us on the surface. They start to fade away as you get deeper and deeper into what is a piece of art, what is a book, what is a free jazz session.
Boy, this is fantastic. Really, thank you both so much for being generous with your time and your ideas today. We really, really appreciate it.
I feel smarter just talking with you all. I feel almost smart enough to go sign up for your online course this summer.
You should definitely sign up.
If you would like more information about this work in the digital humanities and analytics, and to take what will be a free online course from SFI that will be debuting summer of 2021, you can visit santafe.edu/FAHA. You have been listening to Augmented Humanity, which is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.